It's finally time for the broken one, the woken one, the spoken one, my friend, my co-host, and one of the kindest souls you'll ever meet in professional wrestling. He's got some great stories to share with you here today. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Matt Hardy. Give it up for him. Matt, the amount of people that I get messages from on Twitter that are like, your podcast has the coolest theme song in all the world, Obsolete by Jeff Hardy, Brother Nero himself. What a jam, man.
Obsolete.
Matt and I have so much fun every single week on The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. It drops every single Friday. Early access on adfreeshows.com. And today on this panel, we want to talk a lot about some things that we've hit on just a little bit on our podcast, but also take you inside a night that changed pro wrestling history for the Hardy Boys. So first off, my friend, how's the whole podcast experience been for you? How have you been enjoying it so far?
It's been a lot of fun. It's been really great, kind of dipping my toes into something new that I've never really done before. But I think I can sum it up all pretty well in one word. The whole Extreme Life of Matt Hardy podcast experience has been absolutely wonderful!
I knew Broken Matt would show up at some point here. Man, you were out there earlier today and the floor was just mobbed with Matt Hardy fans. It's amazing. You're coming up on 30 years in wrestling. Guys, 30 years in wrestling for Matt Hardy.
October 15th.
October 15th. It's absolutely incredible.
Thank you. That's very kind. Thank you.
The beauty of this panel is I want to take a look back in the Wayback Machine that got you leading up to this point here. But seeing the adoration that you still get from your fans, even as a solo act, how meaningful has that been for you?
I mean, I'm extremely grateful, and it means the world to me. People have been so loyal and so dedicated to Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy over these 30 years. It's been unreal. It's been unbelievable. And I just really am. It's so humbling. Anytime I show up at an autograph signing and there's just a line that goes on for hours, it's the best in the world, man. And once again, it's just a very stark reminder of how I am living my dream. So thank each and every one of you, because without you, I wouldn't be who I am. I mean, this was my dream, my literal dream as a kid. I wanted to be a pro wrestler and become successful at it. And fortunately, I've been able to do that for 30 years, which is a hell of a run in this crazy industry.
And that is Matt fact. That is not Matt fiction. It's been so great seeing your run. And, you know, we have a little tradition on our podcast before we dive into conversation, and that is for you to present your weekly Matt fact. So I would love to hear your StarCast exclusive Matt fact as we begin our panel here.
Matt fact. Matt signed 717 autographs today at StarCast.
Have we checked the numbers on that? Is that legit?
It's an accurate number, yeah.
Okay. All right. It's an accurate. You know, this is a shoot, brother. There's a hot dog stand back there, and I came so close to subtly just putting a can of mustard next to you just to see how you would react to that, because it is Matt fact that Matt strongly dislikes mustard, and that still remains true today. I know. It's crazy, right? He doesn't like mustard. It's wild.
That's the most famous Matt fact by far.
Coming up with the Matt facts, we've talked about it a little bit on our podcast, but the WWE production crew really came through big there for you. How much fun did you have each week coming up with different ones?
I mean, it was great. I would like keep an ongoing list, especially as I would do things just in everyday life. And I'd be like, oh my God, I really like this way. Wait, I should turn that into a Matt fact. So I would jot it down. You know, back before there were all these smart devices, I would take pen and paper and I would keep that with me and I would jot down Matt facts. And then every week at television, when I was going to be wrestling on the show, I would give them three or four Matt facts. And they would choose two, and those would be the Matt facts of the day.
What's your favorite one to this day?
Still, I think just because it's so popular, and it also is such It's been so influential on my career overall that Matt strongly dislikes mustard. And I did so many callbacks to that as Broken Matt back in the day too. You know, there's a scene that we have in my house. I say, why would you bring mustard? You know, I strongly dislike mustard. And I get to do it in the whole Broken Matt insane accent and everything. So that is my favorite one overall.
That guy right there over your shoulder, Brother Nero.
Yes.
A lot of people have been asking me all day even, hey, how's Jeff? I would love to tee that up to you. We were hoping to really have an exciting summer here with Jeff, and circumstantially, unfortunately, we couldn't have him here at StarCast. But I know more than anything, people out there want to make sure that he's doing okay. And mental health and wellness is something that you and I put a lot of pride in and a lot of stock in. So what's the latest?
Something we take very seriously.
Very much so. So what's the latest that you can share with us about Jeff? How's he doing? And any update you have?
Yeah, I mean, right now, currently, Jeff is doing okay. He's away. He's where he needs to be, doing what he needs to do to get right. And that's what I want more than anything else. You know, pro wrestling is only pro wrestling at the end of the day. You know, I want my brother to be a healthy and happy human being just in life in general. If he can wrestle on top of that, that's fantastic. But most importantly, I want him healthy and happy.
It's such an weird stigma that comes with this machismo industry that it's not okay to talk about getting help or wanting to get help. And I do feel like we're on the precipice of kind of breaking through that and getting to a place where it's okay to say, hey, I struggle with mental health. I struggle with addiction, whatever it may be. You are someone who's very open about your struggles with addiction in the past. What is the biggest piece of advice that you can give to anyone at home who may find themselves in a similar situation?
Yeah, I mean, everyone is human, so everyone is going to make mistakes. Everyone are going to have their ups and downs. A lot of time I describe a wrestling career like a cosine curve. You know, it has ups and it has downs and it has ups and downs. But I mean, that's what life is. Life is all about peaks and valleys. And there's also, there's always going to be times in everyone's life where they end up kind of down on themselves and they find themselves in a challenging and difficult situation. And the most important thing is to just make sure that you set your priorities right and correctly. And, you know, if there's a time when it comes to substance abuse, talking about addiction, I mean, if there is something you feel like you can't get through the day with, then you have a problem and it's something that needs to be addressed. You have to make sure that you're in control of your life and you have to really prioritize your life in the right way. And work and always focus on what you're doing as far as your priorities. And for me, the greatest priority that really motivates me to be the best version of myself that I possibly can be are my children, my family in general, and then my kids. Like to have children, these human beings that you made, and they look at you with this, you know, innocent and just unadulterated love. I mean, I would do anything for them. I would give them anything. So the least I can give them is to be the best version of myself and to be someone they can look up to and someone they can use as a role model in their life.
Of course, it helps when you have Mama Hardy there at the compound. My favorite Hardy, might I add. Hello, Rebbe.
Of course.
She is one of the most unique individuals that you will ever meet, and she has done so much for you personally and for your family. And she's been such an essential part of your progression, too. Without Rebbe, Queen Rebecca, and Senor Benjamin, I'm not sure you and I are sitting on this stage right here having this panel, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a possibility that we are not. She's great. She is she's truculent. She's a little loco. And I think she'd be the first to admit that.
Claro
but,
que sí.
But everything she does is with the best intentions. And she knows what it takes to get the job done. And that's what she does. And she supported me in a time where a lot of people would have like cut and run. But she was there for me. And for that fact, I will always love her and I will always adore her. And on top of that, she gave me four beautiful kids, three boys and a girl. And, you know, women, they have the hard job there. They get pregnant. Their body changes. Guys, my job's easy. I'm just a contributor, you know. I'm just a contributor. You know, I get to play with the kids. I get to experience the kids. I don't have to go through what they do. So I'm very grateful for her sacrificing herself and her body, as most people know, she did modeling, many other things before in the past, you know, to give us those four beautiful children.
The gaggle of children.
My gaggle.
It's become like a running meme that you and Rebbe just look at each other and all of a sudden, here comes another Hardy baby.
I mean, that's all time. We don't even have to touch, actually, have children now. We've got it down pat.
The essence takes over in the Hardy compound and things are about to be broken. That's how it goes down. Man, listen, you're a serial reinventor, and that was truthfully one of the reasons why I approached you about doing this podcast project.
I love that term, by the way, serial reinventor.
It's what you are, because there are so many times in your career that you have been forced to reinvent. Not right. By choice. And by choice you have as well, but by you've been forced to. And right now you find yourself having to do that.
Yes.
From circumstances out of your control. The broken character came from having to reinvent.
Yes. A lot of reinventions have come from being a victim of circumstance, you know, making the most of what you have to work with.
How do you take on that challenge? Because I would love to take people inside the mind of Matt Hardy here for a second. How do you go about approaching that challenge and coming up with a new character concept and then on the fly tweaking it until we get ultimately a finished product like we did, say, with the broken character?
Right. Pro wrestling is really an interesting television show. And if you look at it like such as a television show, you know, most television shows you watch, John, what's your favorite television show?
My favorite television show is Curb Your Enthusiasm.
How many episodes would they have a season?
They got about 10 a season.
How many episodes a season though?
How
many episodes would they have a season?
They have 10 episodes a season. They've had 11 seasons.
Gotcha. Okay. But you think about that. So, every year, basically, they're having a season with 10 episodes, correct?
Sure.
Pro wrestling is 52 weeks a year, if you're in one of the major companies. And if you have a character that is doing a character arc on a Raw or a SmackDown, and sometimes at WWE you're getting hit with multiple television appearances, sometimes at AEW you get hit with multiple television appearances, the crowd will definitely change course on whatever your character is. You can have a character that becomes great and successful and over, but people's attention spans, especially in this day and age, only last so long. And at some point, they will grow old of what you've done. And you have to freshen yourself up. And that's when you have to reinvent and whatnot. The very first time I left WWE, well, it wasn't the first time I left. The first time I left, I was fired for a couple weeks, and then I was back. With a raise, by the way. So I did that right.
Big money, Matt, baby.
And then when I left WWE in 2010... right before I went to TNA for a little while. And like just, that's where I went through my addiction issues and like my body was so beat up and a pill problem. After getting that addressed and getting myself on the right path, I ended up showing up at Ring of Honor. And it's so funny because I was really excited to work with that young talent. I've always loved working with young talent now that, you know, I'm a veteran personality in pro wrestling. And the fact that I went to Ring of Honor and I was working with these young talents and I was having like very competitive matches, and I was doing my best to build them up and whatnot, but the crowd completely hated it because they had a little bit of a grudge against who I turned into at the very end of my WWE career. They're like, no, you're old, you're played out, you're gone. These are our new stars. We don't want to see this bullshit WWE style, you know, on Ring of Honor television. So I said, okay, well, if these guys don't like me, let me embrace that and let me lean into it. And that's where I became Big Money Matt. And literally, I said, like, I'm a guy who's made millions of dollars over the course of, you know, almost 20 years already. And you're lucky I'm willing to come in here and even touch any of these Ring of Honor nobodies. You know, and that was the easiest route to go. And then because they were booing me or they were sick of me as it was, I just like leaned into it and I fully embraced it and went heel.
I'd love to talk about your first invention. I won't even call it a reinvention because it's the first iteration of the Hardys that we truthfully saw as a unit in the World Wrestling Federation with. A man you refer to as Wrestling Daddy, of course. And I can't believe this is the first time his name has come up this weekend here at StarCast. Michael P.S. Hayes. Do we have any Michael Hayes fans out there? Yeah, that's what I thought we did. Wrestling Daddy, Matt Hardy.
Michael Purely Sexy Hayes. Yeah, man. It was great. Like, obviously, when we first came to WWE, I mean, we got hired and we were getting paid every week. You know, we get paid per shot, whatever. But basically, we were guys who were still working as enhancement talent on the roster to make sure we would put other acts over, and we'd get a little bit here and there. And then once they finally trusted us enough to do something with us, they said, okay, we're going to stick with Michael Hayes, and, you know, we're going to make you guys over. Funny story, talking about reinvention and whatnot. Michael tells us we get a heads up maybe a week, 2 weeks before that we're going to be tied to Michael Hayes, and he is going to be our mentor, and we're going to change our attitude, not necessarily turn into bad guys or heels, but we're going to be a lot more aggressive. And we got the call to start television a little earlier than we expected. And he said, guys, we got to go. We got to get some matching damn outfits. We got to change up the look. We need to go get it today. And we go to, we're going to go out. We're going to go shop it. And he said, so I was thinking, you know, since we're kind of like the new Freebirds. And I was like, hold up. Are we the new Freebirds? Is that really what we're doing? I mean, we're going to listen to you. You are officially our mentor, our wrestling daddy now. And then he said, well, like the birds, he said, what do you think we get? It's like some tight jeans. You know, maybe you guys will wear some cowboy boots. We get a big flannel, cut the sleeves off. How's that sound? Does that sound pretty good? And I remember Jeff, who's just like so laid back and like cool as a cucumber, goes, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. But what if you like update it to kind of like 1990-ish maybe? And he said, okay, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Tell me. And we end up going into not a Hot Topic, which we did get stuff from a Hot Topic. But Gadzooks is where we discovered the original Hardy Boys garb. And I'll never forget, we were in there. We got the big pants. And we said, what if we get some of these shirts? They're tight. It would kind of look good together. And it's like something you kind of wrestle in. It's kind of like a current raver look, which a lot of people are rocking and doing. It's kind of like trendy right now. And then I remember we go in, we put it on, we come out. And we look both pretty cool. We're pretty young dudes at that point, right? It was eons ago. And then I remember Michael said, I like it. Y'all got my size? And then Michael sure enough went, and he found kickwear pants in the size. He got in the shirt in the size, and I'll never forget when he came out. He had his belt like high, you know, it was like up over his ribs. You know, it's how high his pants were pulled up. And we said, well, let's rock and roll, Michael. You look great. Let's do it. And just, lo and behold, man, he was committed to the bit. He was committed to the team.
He also had another suggestion that you could possibly wear instead some custom outfits, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. He even said this about, this wasn't even right in the beginning, but later on he said, well, guys, you know, we got to keep reinventing. We got to keep recreating ourselves. He says, I'll tell you what. And this was obviously after he put down about a 12-pack of beer. And he said, how about we get together and we create some brand new robes, but we make robes like nobody's ever seen before. These robes, they're made out of forks, knives, and spoons. What do you think about that? That's like, that just sure seems like it'd be hard to get through the airport, man. I don't think it's gonna, we're gonna take a whole bag for that jacket, man. But bless his heart, man. He really was. We got on the road with him, and he said right at the beginning, a throwback to the Fabulous Freebirds. He said, all right, guys, we're gonna do this. We gotta do it right. And I like how I kind of go into like a Michael Hayes half-ass accent when I start talking. He said, all right, guys, we're gonna do this. We gotta do it right. He said, we're gonna be just like the Freebirds. We're going to be a trinity. We're three brothers. He said, we do everything together. He said, we ride together. We break bread together. And we heal a hotel room. We all stay in the same hotel room. We'll get two double beds every night. He said, and then you and Jeff, you can alternate who's going to sleep on the cot every night. I'm always in a bed. Of course, I'm the leader. And then I'll never forget, after our first house show, we were driving, and he said, what are y'all guys doing? What are you doing? We said, oh, we're hungry. We'd like to stop and eat. He said, that's bullshit. The old vets, the old veterans, they didn't do that. They just drive to the next town. They'd get a 12-pack of beer on the way, or a bottle of vodka, whatever it was. And I said, oh, well, you know, Michael, we don't drink. Oh, boy, that definitely was eons ago. And and we stopped at a Cracker Barrel. And I remember we went to Cracker Barrel, we sat down, we ordered, and Michael was like looking over the menu, and he was looking at it like it was written in Chinese. And he was like, and he was turning it over and backwards and folding it around. Hey, where the hell's the alcohol on here? And we said, well, that's, Cracker Barrel doesn't have alcohol, Michael. I said, they don't sell any alcohol, they don't sell beer, they don't sell liquor. He said, well, that's bullshit! From now on, we only stop at a restaurant if they have a damn bar. And that was the deal. We could only stop at restaurants that had a bar. That's the only place we could stop and eat.
He, of course, was not the only Southerner who could throw back a couple beers that you guys would encounter during your early days in WWF, the Wild West, as you refer to it. There was another man who goes by the name John Bradshaw Layfield, who the Hardy Boys had a few encounters with, including, you talked about trying to go through airports with those forks, knives, and spoons.
Yeah.
Well, one time you happened to maybe steal someone's first class seat. See, the Hardy Boys, they won the WWF Tag Team Championship for the first time back in 1999. A big deal.
Once again, this was another mess that Michael Hayes got us into. Yeah, when you talk about JBL, JBL is a hell of a charismatic personality for sure. Well, hell, John Alba, I guess you want me to talk about John Bradshaw Layfield, JBL. I heard a rumor that there was a man crying crocodile tears in the male locker room. Is this true, John Alba? And are you an internet stooge? That was a true quote from JBL. So it wasn't about John Alba, though.
It was someone
very different. Yeah, there was a time where when we won the tag team titles in Fayetteville, North Carolina, which myself and my brother, that was us realizing our dream in full. When we were able to make it and sign a contract with WWE, that was the most exciting thing ever. And we said if we won the WWE World Tag Team titles one time, then we've done everything we want to do. Fortunately, we were very blessed. We obviously won many tag team titles all over the world in many different promotions. But after we won those first World Tag Team titles, Michael, being the great wrestling daddy that he was, and we really are, we're so close. I love Michael Hayes so much. No one in pro wrestling taught me more about pro wrestling than Michael Hayes. And I owe him, I'm very grateful to him for all of the success I've been able to attain over the years. But Michael was being a proud papa, and he said, hey, well, this is a Tuesday SmackDown. We film it. It's a Tuesday taping. It's going to be the Raw the following week when it airs. And we're still working on the road. We're not going home, even though we were in our backyard in Fayetteville, North Carolina, just 40 minutes down the road from the Hardy compound. We're flying out of Raleigh-Durham Airport the next day. And whenever we get there and we pull up, we've got the belts with us. We're very proud. We're the champions. We're going on the road to work all these house shows and defend the titles. We're the number one tag team in the world, or at least the WWE at the time. And Mark said, hey, I got you guys a surprise. I think you're going to love it. You guys are the new tag team champions, so I got you guys upgraded to first class. I got 1 billion miles on Delta, so I was able to do it. I just use some of my pool, and I got you up in first class. We're like, Michael, no. We don't want to get in first class. We've already pushed it up. We just beat JBL and Ron Simmons, and I don't want them to kill us. I don't want people to think we're hot shots. I don't want to sit in first class. And he says, no, it's going to be fine. Trust me. All the boys, they love you. They love you. And then we end up getting in first class, and like where we sit is like by both window seats. I remember like I'm on the window side of maybe Ron Simmons, and Jeff is on the window side. On the inside, the aisle seat is Godfather. And we're sitting there, and they're like, oh, hey, well, Michael put us up here, guys. You know, we're not trying to act like we're hot shit or anything. This is, he put us up here as a reward, and we're really appreciative. It's great to be up here with you guys. And then they're getting ready to close the door, and they close the door. They go, wait, hold that one moment. We have one passenger coming down the jetway right now. And then lo and behold, coming down the jetway was Glenn Jacobs. You may know him as Kane. And he is running down to get on the plane. He had a hell of an issue. He had a car problem. He comes, gets on the plane. All the boys are going, oh, my God, Glenn, you're going back to coach? And he said, yeah, apparently somebody stole my seat in first class. And Jeff and I, we're trying to get out with everything we had. And these guys are just holding us down the seats. Oh, my God, no. No, you stay here. You guys are the champs. You earn these first class seats. And we said, oh, my God, the fix is in. We knew they had us. We fly to New York. We work in Poughkeepsie that night. And, of course, we end up going to wrestler's court over this. Maybe you guys have heard about it. A lot of people probably think it's an urban legend, but it is a real thing. They do have wrestler's court. We're in wrestler's court, and I'll never forget JBL. JBL was the guy that was
the bailiff.
Yeah. Well, he was the prosecutor.
He's the prosecutor in this.
He was the prosecutor. Yeah. And I remember he comes in there and he tells us right before the court. He said, "Look, guys, we know you guys didn't mean to do this. Michael's the one to put you up in the first class seat. It's on him at the end of the day. So we're really going for him. You guys just be good. Make sure you guys both get the Undertaker a fifth of Jack." He said, if you get that, he said, you can buy off the judge. I promise. I've talked to him. So we're there. We're sitting up there. He said, and Bradshaw gets up. He says, well, hell, I just want to say to everybody here in the World Wrestling Federation, what happened here today, this incident that happened with the Hardy Boys, apparently they're main eventers now. They're sitting in first class. They won the World Tag Team title one time the day before, and they told Kane, who's a former world champion, to get his ass in the back. You're a nobody now. The Hardy Boys run this show. So just think about this, ladies and gentlemen. That could have been your first class seat. That could have been your first class seat. That could have been your first class seat. And the Hardy Boys don't give a shit because they got the big head. The Hardy Boys think they're the main event. They told Kane, go to hell, Kane. Put your ass in the back. You're obsolete now. You don't mean anything. And ladies and gentlemen, I rest my case. Because the Hardy Boys could have done this to any one of you. Keep that in mind. He said, end of statement. Oh, my God. I mean, they went hard, man. And then eventually at the end of the day, after the case had been rested, and I pick up my waters from this mess I've made, and our case had been rested, they said, well, we do find the Hardy Boys guilty. Undertaker said, but they have brought a couple of special prizes, a couple fifths of Jack, so I am willing to be bribed. I am going to let the Hardy Boys go. They are innocent. Michael Hayes was sentenced for a month to buy Glenn Jacobs lunch because he took all of his first class dinner that day. So he had to buy him lunch for a month. That was his sentence. Crazy. Wrestling court is something you guys have heard about. It sounds like an urban legend, but it is a real thing. And usually it was done for fun to try and teach someone a lesson. But it was truly the Wild West days. You never knew what you were going to get into when you landed in wrestler's court.
Go to hell.
Yeah. And there was one point where he came up to us and he asked us to drink a bunch of beers the night before. And we said, oh, sorry, we don't drink beer. He said, you don't drink? What kind of freaks are you? And I'd say, oh, I'm so sorry that, you know, we don't drink, but it's great to see you today, Mr. Bradshaw. And his hand, he would start to stick it out, and he'd draw it back and go to hell. And every day, you know, especially back then in the 90s, when you go in, you have to shake everyone's hand every single day. How are you today, Mr. Bradshaw? Go to hell. How are you today, Mr. Bradshaw? Go to hell. How are you today, Mr. Bradshaw? Go to hell. We got that for 6 weeks straight every single day.
And that is Matt Fact, not Matt Fiction.
Correct.
The broken character, man, we could do an entire panel on the broken character itself, but it was so far ahead of its time. We saw what would happen in the pandemic stage of wrestling, where cinematic matches and the wink and a nod presentation of pro wrestling became status quo, and you were the trailblazer with that. You've always been so forward-thinking, and you've always been okay with the idea of letting wrestling fans in on the gag. Why are you okay with that?
I think it's just the era we live in. I mean, we live in this age of information. And they opened Pandora's box in the late 90s during the Attitude Era between the things that were done at WWF at the time and WCW. And once Vince kind of opened the business up, especially the Bret Screwed Bret, that was the beginning of really peeling back the curtain and kind of letting them see the man behind the curtain, I think, so to say. So I think fans understand now more than ever it is entertainment. They do love to get drawn into it and really feel a match that's going on and, like, be so absorbed into their two guys and want their guy to win. But I still feel like it's an alternative way to entertain people that's just done differently. And I think at the end of the day, I think wrestling is good when it's a reality show, when you have different characters that do different things. I love different styles of matches. And I think reality show or variety show works when it comes to pro wrestling. And I thought that I could do that, especially at TNA, as I was becoming an older veteran performer who wasn't as limber. I couldn't do everything I used to could do in the past. It's like, what if I'm more of a theatrical character? Let me do this. How can I present this theatrical character? And I said, well, I can really lean into it, and I can commit to the bit and see if I can make people think I'm crazy or make them think I'm on pain pills again or whatever. I just tried to, like, really convince people and commit to the bit. So once I started doing the whole broken Matt Hardy thing, I was like, how can I present myself different as far as matches go? And then I thought about doing a cinematic match. I said, what if, like, this Hardy compound that I live on is almost like a character in the story? Because it's a real thing. We really do. We live on 90 acres in Cameron, North Carolina. My brother and I, his family land that's been through three generations of Hardy family. And then we had all these different places, like the Lake of Reincarnation. Became such an over gimmick in this where a guy could go in as one persona, and when he comes back out, he's his other persona. And once again, it's silly. There's a wink and a nod, but it's a different way of entertaining people. And especially at that time, it was so drastically different from anything I'd ever done before because I was willing to step out of my comfort zone and just step out of the realm of normal for this, and people really embraced it. And at first, it was very polarizing because there were some people that thought it was the worst thing ever, And there's some people that said, oh, my God, this is brilliant. It's so creative and masterful. But it evoked emotion. And I knew there were so many people that were invested in it, one way or the other, that we really tapped into something.
Matt and I did a six-part series called Becoming Broken, which really dives into all the nuances of the broken character and how it came about and how it culminated at WrestleMania 33. And it culminated with a very special WrestleMania return in that ladder match where you and Jeff would win the Raw Tag Team Championships. And I mentioned being ahead of the curve and kind of that wink and a nod, letting people in and understanding that it's okay for the fans to be in on the gag. Well, there's another tag team out there that totally shares that mentality.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are a couple good brothers, and they're here with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause here for Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, the Good Brothers.
Wind it up. I didn't even know if you guys were going to make the booking or not, Good Brother.
We always make the booking, baby.
We haven't been making a lot of towns lately.
Good to see you. Right there, brother.
Yeah, I'm here.
You're right there, brother.
You tell me where to go, baby.
Yes, pleasure, right there. You're good right there.
This is live on Fight.
We are the lead into Ric Flair's last match, man. There's your microphone right there.
I'm loaded with Diet.
You got your mic. You're good there.
I'm loaded with Diet Coke. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yes,
sir. This is way more professional than our
shitty podcast.
Let's fucking go. Can I cuss, baby?
You can cuss.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Go nuts.
We are live.
Hey, man, hey, this is the extreme life. I'm already be extreme.
Yeah. So me and the big man.
Feel free to bury yourself.
So me and the big man, hey, we looked at each other. We always do this one thing. We always look at each other and I go, hey, let's rock this motherfucker, right? And we do a high five and a fist pump. And I said, dude, this is live on Fight TV. And he goes, oh, fuck.
Well, we've been here since, what, 10 a.m.,
well,
9 a.m.?
It's been a long day.
Yeah.
And all day the machine gun goes, we're going live on Fight TV. I know. You told me 58 times.
I'm trying to make sure.
But we're also not wrestling today. And sometimes I like to get overheated.
Here we go. Well, Matt Hardy's podcast with John Alba. It's good to see you guys. Thank you for having us.
It's great to
have you. Yes, thank you for having us.
No.
Real quick, my phone rang last week, and I never answer my phone. And I looked at my phone, right? And my wife goes, you gonna answer that? And I go, of course I am. And it was Matt Hardy calling me.
Well, why not?
Who doesn't answer a Matt Hardy call?
You gotta answer that.
You gotta answer a Matt Hardy call. When Matt Hardy is your friend, you win.
Oh, boy.
So, gentlemen, we got about a half hour left here before we lead into Ric Flair.
So can you hurry the fuck up? Come on.
Anyways, more us stories? No?
We'll get plenty, I'm sure.
You guys are a very important part of this WrestleMania 33 story that we've talked a little bit about on the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy, but the broken Hardys, they take the wrestling world by storm. What were your impressions when you guys first saw Brother Nero and Broken Matt?
I would love to take this out of the gate, and I don't even know if you know this. We are in Japan in Ryogoku Sumo Hall, but for WWE. We've made the jump. There's a laptop.
Matt was in
Impact.
Yeah, he's in Impact TNA at the time, whatever it was called. And they go, what is this?
I'll tell you what it is. It's amazing.
Right. So we watch it the first time through the whole Cena, everybody.
Was this when Jericho was doing the show-ins?
No. Cena walked by and goes, what are you guys watching?
What are you guys watching?
It was me, you, Woods, Jericho, I mean, all the boys.
And we're popping our little nuts off.
We're watching what Matt Hardy was doing in Impact, which no one else was watching.
Yeah, nobody's Impact watching Impact at the time. Nobody.
And what were you thinking? TV years were great.
let's be honest, right?
Yeah, be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. No one else was watching Impact then, right? And the only person that ever came out of Impact that over was Matt Hardy.
Well, we said that later. And then.
Until we showed up.
Until you showed up.
The only guy who got made again out of Impact was that. It was unreal. But.
No, but Cena walked by and goes, this is John Cena, guys. He's
Peacemaker.
John, it's John Cena.
He got a little bit over.
John Cena, the actor, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of a big star. Yeah. He walked by and goes, what are you guys watching? We told him, and he goes, I'll watch in a little bit. He walked away. But and I imagine he certainly watched at some point, right?
100%.
Yeah. Do you know Matt?
I know he was very familiar with Broken Matt Hardy.
Of course.
John Cena, there was a couple times he imitated Broken Matt.
Oh, really?
He was there doing Broken Matt.
Well, yeah, Matt, so I don't know if you know this or not, Matt, but you know, buddy.
You're kind of a big deal.
You've done it.
People know you. You have many leather-bound books.
You've done it, babe.
I'll never forget. I've known Gallows for a long time.
Too long.
Yeah. No. Not long enough. Got to keep you around, big brother.
Well,
and then I was just going to say, I met Chad really at an indie show, right?
Yeah.
A little earlier.
In Milwaukee.
Before you ended up doing the deal. But I remember you said, like, man, I saw you were doing all this Broken Matt Hardy stuff. And he's like, I was asking friends, like, man, I think Matt's on pills again. He said, yeah. Matt's fell off the deep end, guys.
He's eating the grapes. He's drinking the McAllister.
Oh, he's back on the grapes.
So all the rumors.
That was his quote, the grapes.
The grapes. That's what it was. Yeah.
All the rumors are flying.
Hey, so Matt had he had a battle with demons, right?
Yeah. Right.
Of course.
Indeed.
Okay. We've all been there.
I start teaming with Gallows, right? I meet Matt.
It was
finally
a big letdown for his singles run, guys.
But I meet Matt finally. And Matt, and I go, fuck, me and Matt connected right away, right? And I was like, fuck, this is amazing. Then I start seeing Matt doing the broken stuff, right? And I'm going, man, this is funny, but oh man, there's no way that he's okay, right? He's got to be fucked, right?
And literally, you know, I'm the most sober I've ever been in my life.
All the way in life.
He's finally the most sober he's ever been.
He's never been more fucked up in his life. It's amazing.
So like, this is an integral part of this story that weirdly happened today.
He's speaking with a British accent.
Weirdly, it happened today.
I said, dude, he's talking with an English accent. Like, he's clearly fucked up. Like, and everyone goes, no, Gallows goes, dude, he's clean. I go, I don't know, man. You're fucked up.
He's straightening his hair now.
He's fucked up. I don't know, man.
So
Matt's insane.
Yeah. So at WrestleMania 33, you guys.
Thank you, John Alba. Get us back on track.
I got you, brother. So this was such a great story. And I feel like this story is the essence of the Good Brothers here. Matt and I told this on the podcast. So the Hardy Boys are going to make their surprise debut in WWE at WrestleMania. Yes. It's supposed to be a triple threat ladder match between you guys, Enzo and Cass, and The Bar. But little do we know, there's going to be a fourth team that's added. And Matt, that starts with you a few days before WrestleMania in a WWE van.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go.
This was going to be the culmination, too, of like what we had done, something we built, which became very special in TNA, was the Expedition of Gold. Or as Broken Matt would say, the Expedition of Gold. And we'd won the TNA titles. And then we went and won all these independent. We went to Mexico and won titles. And we challenged the Young Bucks. There was a falling out between us and Jeff Jarrett, Anthem, who was new management, and we ended up leaving. We showed up and upset the Young Bucks and become the Ring of Honor champions, and we never dropped technically the TNA titles. And then we held the Ring of Honor tag team titles up until the night before, where we had a 30-minute match with the Young Bucks at Supercard of Honor, and then we were going to be at WrestleMania. So the Thursday before, we flew in a day early, and we got in this nice car. They were driving us over, and they told these guys, they said, guys, you can't talk about your match in the hotel. They don't allow ladders, right?
There's going to be some really secretive guys showing up, except the entire internet and 5 million people knew.
This was before me. This is way before me and Matt were friends at all.
Okay. Yeah.
And
zero. No, we never texted ever. Never talked.
Before we had each other's numbers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then I remember we were driving over. And do you guys know Mark Carano? Has anyone ever heard of the legend of Mark Carano?
He's got blonde hair now. Looks great.
Mark Carano, when I first was there, he was a driver. and he would drive you to the appearances. He had the lowest man on the totem pole. He ended up being the head of talent relations, half-ass, you know, right, working right underneath John Laurinaitis. He came and picked us up this day. So we are going to this kayfabe place, this little area behind the PC somewhere, a garage, and they told these guys they can't do their ladder match. They can't talk about it in the hotel because they don't allow ladders in or some horseshit. So we're driving over there, and Mark said, "Oh, it's so good to see you guys. It feels like just yesterday we were making those towns, making the appearance." He said, "Well, let me smarten you up to everything. Okay. You know the Good Brothers?" I said, "Oh, well," I said, I know Gallows real well. I said, "He's great." I said, I met Hot Carl. I said, "And he seems like a badass dude." He said, "Oh, they're fucking great." He said, "They'll do anything." He said, "They're easy." He said, "They're great to work with. They're just happy to be there, making a great paycheck. You know, making big money in America, brother. They're so happy to be here."
Now we're talking.
Good brothers. And he said, "Do you know Sheamus and Cesaro?" And I go, "Well, I know Sheamus. I don't know Cesaro that well." I said, "You know, I worked with Sheamus right when he first came in the beginning." He said, "Well, they're probably going to be upset." He said, "Because I think they believe they're winning this match." He said, "And that's not the case now, so I don't know how they're going to react to it."
Son exactly of a bitch. We're going to the fourth. Is it called the fourth wall?
We're breaking down the fourth wall here. So my Matt Hardy does that.
Karate kick.
That's it.
It's been broken.
Who does a karate kick? That's Sheamus.
Matt does it now, goddammit.
Karate kick.
Excuse the GD.
I just broke kick the fourth wall. The fourth wall is broken.
This is Matt Hardy, man. The only guy that ever got over from TNA. If I give him a break, man. Besides AJ. Okay,
hey, you got like four more checks to pick up, so relax, cowboy.
So
there's one more team in this match, because originally it was the triple threat. And then Mark Hernandez said, "Well, do you guys know Enzo and Cass?" I said, "No, I've never met him." He said, "Oh, fuck. Enzo and Cass are fucking gimmicks." That's what was described before we
young
went
into kids. They were young.
Secret kayfabe meeting with these guys.
He's basically saying they're going to mark out when they see you, more or less.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you got to be so back up a second, right?
Yeah, sure.
So you got a ladder match. Let's be honest.
It's your
guys,
match.
Are you ready? WrestleMania. Like, that's what kids dream of, right?
Right.
And me and Big Man dream of that. Like,
of course.
And
this is your first WrestleMania too.
It was my first WrestleMania. And we even, we always do this, right? Let's rock this motherfucker. That's what we do. Let's rock this motherfucker. That's how we do it. So we did it, and I said, "Hey, you know, we might not ever get this again. Let's enjoy this." And he goes, "I know." And you never know. You never know.
You don't.
So credit to as insane as Enzo and Big Cass are, dude, they were way out of there. They had no clue what was going on.
They didn't know what was happening.
They're so young. And then you have the greatest comeback of all time.
Dude, that.
At a WWE thing. Dude, you can do Stone Cold, The Rock, sure. But number three, at least, has to be the Hardy Boys coming back.
Well, I'll never forget.
And we were in that ring, and did I not say before that music hit, I said it.
Well, no, go ahead.
You sure?
Yeah. You permission
sure?
granted.
You sure? No.
Are you guys going to fight? I got a lot to say. Get it out of your mouth.
Fuck, man.
No, all of us were in that ring. Right, I knew the Hardy Boys music was about to hit, and I said, "Man,
Toronto must have told you."
I said, "Feel this. Get ready. And they all said, "Yeah," and they get it. You know, it was Enzo, Cass, Big Man, and I wasn't talking to Sheamus and Claudio.
So
I love them, but
so before they get out there, so you guys are driven to this area here, and
yeah, well, we pull up to where the other three teams are supposedly talking.
Hidden in a garage, not to cut you off on your own show. Hidden in a garage, and they go, "The secret team's coming." There
yeah,
we go.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
who
so
is it?
We
who could
we,
it be?
We pull in an SUV, and the windows are tinted,
blacked out Suburban.
They went
dude.
That far.
Like
they
Secret
tinted
Service.
The windows so they couldn't see who we were when we pulled in. That's how much they protected the reveal.
Yeah,
and then eventually
they opened
okay,
the door
wait.
And goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, the Hardy Boys."
No. They said, "Wait." Mark Ron said, "Okay, open the door," and we open the door simultaneously. And all I hear in the background
is Carl Anderson saying, "Brother Nero, I knew you'd come." That's a true story. As true as it gets.
Dude, so I have to tell you this. This is, all my stories are self-deprecating
because
they don't really work out any better. But Bully Ray walked up to our table today. We're all signing at StarCast. We're all doing autographs and stuff. And he goes, "I got to tell you guys this story. It's something you've never heard before." And I was like, "Okay, well, what is it?" And he goes, So I don't know if you guys know this, but I've been in some bad relationships. but the first time I got married, it was a very wrestlered out wedding that I didn't necessarily.
This is amazing.
I didn't necessarily want to have, but was forced into. And some of the biggest names in the entire business showed up for this fucking shit-tastic wedding.
Matt Hardy. Shannon Moore.
The Dudleys.
Evan Courageous.
Everyone in Three Count.
Three Count had their green circles,
Three
too.
Count.
But Bubba came up to us, and he goes, "Hey, the one thing I wanted to tell you that you don't know about this, because I had no idea about it." He goes, "I saw Matt Hardy for the first time at your wedding." And I'm like, "There's a positive out of that wedding?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "And he looked great." And then I don't know if it was his idea or your idea, but then that started the communications, and then you guys go back to Impact, and you start being Broken Matt. Bubba's story was that he called Gaburik and was like, "This guy looks great. He's good again. Here we go." And I was like, "Fuck, that's very interesting, and I've never heard it before, but it's like a catalyst that goes into the rest of all this." And if it's true or not, it was a good story.
It was interesting that time, because at first at Impact, they kept, you guys obviously know, you've worked Impact a lot recently. But they were bringing me in, and they kept trying to get me to sign a contract for the longest time. I said, "No, I really like this." Once I was away from WWE, I just loved doing indies and being my own man.
Let's be honest. You're one of the greatest freelancers of all time. Remember the Honky Tonk Man conversation?
Well,
you can't make that much money out here. And Matt Hardy looked at us and goes, yes, you can.
So let's be honest, right? So Honky Tonk Man goes, "You can't make $100,000 outside of WWE. I told Matt Hardy that. Matt Hardy goes, "You want to bet?"
Well, we knew it was bullshit. He really knew. Because he added another zero to it.
Yeah, right.
"You want to bet?"
I'll never forget, too, whenever I first met you at that show, and you guys had a little match. I remember Honky Tonk Man said, you're going to New York, right?
Yeah.
He said, "If you take a bump, you're a dumb motherfucker."
"You're a dumb motherfucker." I sell with my eyes, because I'm always looking at these motherfuckers, because if he kicked me in the head and my neck breaks, nobody gives a fuck. And then I can't buy my little daughter new shoes.
So real quick, we got about 10 more minutes or so. I want to put a bow tie on the WrestleMania 33
thing. Let's wrap it up, right?
For a second.
He's had enough.
Brother, they're giving us the Iggy.
We're getting the...
Enough of y'all bullshit, anyways.
Someone's got a big match tonight. Someone's got a big match tonight.
Take it home, guys.
So,
big man.
WrestleMania 33. So you guys are standing there in the ring.
Yes.
The New Day come out. They do this great tease that they're going to be the fourth team that's in the match. But instead, the iconic Loaded Hardy Boys music hits, and I was there in attendance as a spectator. My hairs were legitimately standing. First off, you, Matt, that sea of people, 70,000 people losing their absolute shit in a way that I've never seen at a wrestling event before, the delete chants everywhere. For you and Jeff, just the gravitas of that moment, how did it feel?
I mean, it was surreal. And I describe it like this all the time. I remember.
Does the music hit and you guys, like, so there's been times, sorry.
No.
But there's been times when our music hits and we get a reaction, right? And we go, fuck, we're over. But I can't imagine that pop.
I mean, what a pop.
Because that's the culmination of your reinvention.
Sure, yeah. And as we're doing that, I remember coming out. Because we had just busted ass to kind of get to the arena. We got there after WrestleMania started. And then they literally ran us up flights of stairs. You remember that gorilla? We were running up flights of stairs.
Oh, yeah, that was brutal.
Yeah.
And Rebby was pregnant, right?
Rebby had Maxwell on her back, and she had Whoopi in her tummy. She was pregnant. And we're running up there doing that, and she walks in, and it's like Vince is there giving big hugs, and Shawn Michaels and John Cena. And it's just like, she's like, wow, this is really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then everybody goes out, and then we're sitting there. And I remember Jeff was like, Jeff does this all the time when he gets nervous. I just got to get it out. Woo!
That's Jeff's thing.
That's awesome.
It is Jeff's thing. And I just like chill. I've just, do you know what I believe in? Reality. You know, and I understood how we'd worked and we created this moment and built this moment. We had these guys that were going to bust our ass to like have this great match with us. And then walking out through that curtain to see the sea of humanity, because I hadn't been in that venue that day. I hadn't seen the crowd.
And you can still see it, right? You can see it.
There's fucking 80,000 people doing your chant with your motion.
Doing this thing we did, created in, like, you know, TNA.
Which you created in TNA, by the way.
Which isn't supposed to get over on that television show, which 100% makes it more iconic. I remember looking at the chills on my arms, and I looked at his arm, and I went, okay, this is fucking unreal.
And just coming down, when I think about that moment, in my mind, even if I'd close my eyes, the moment seems like a dream. It's like blurry around the edges because it was just so surreal in so many ways. But it was just so validating that we were willing to take a chance and step out of our comfort zone and step out of our creativity zone and do the whole Broken Matt and Brother Nero. So it really
paid
off.
You guys were also exactly what you said you were and delivered. And I never forgot that. You know what I mean? It translates all the way across every company you ever go to. That's what makes that's what makes wrestling icons, which I'm marking out for you right now, but it's really fucking cool. You know?
Well, and with that said, too, like we were in the ring, right? And you know me, I'm pretty into, like, what's going on.
And little old you?
And I said, dude, like, let's enjoy this. This the music's about to hit. It's about to be fucking hot.
I remember Scotty Armstrong said to me when I was doing like my first like WrestleMania Battle Royal when I was in my 20s, like, man, you got to look around, really enjoy this. Yeah. And Scott was always nice to us, and I always was like, oh, yeah, that's cool, but like, I'm the goddamn Battle Royal. This is 2007, I'm fastest or whatever. But I remember that night, I was like, this is when you enjoy. You stand here and you watch this because you don't ever get to do it again. It was cool as fuck.
Michael Hayes actually said that to us, I remember, at WrestleMania 17, TLC 2. He said, remember, guys, you might not get any more of these moments. You need to take it all in. You need to soak it all in as you walk down that aisle. And we're like, yeah, whatever.
Whatever, dude.
Whatever, forks, knives, and spoons. We're going to be doing this for a long time.
Yeah, I'll do this for 20 more years, dude. Grow up.
Well, you know, the Hardy Boys will be in wheelchairs by the time they're 26. So
that's what we heard, yeah.
And you're actually concussed perpetually, apparently, according to the internet as well. So
Of course. Actually, these guys know. A lot of people think I'm a zombie, but I'm... It's a little bit of a downgrade from that. I'm a hologram.
He's a hologram and he's immortal. There's another guy who said he was immortal, but this man actually is.
Matt Hardy's still alive, guys. And we are, you're looking at, do you guys realize that Matt Hardy's on stage right now? Yeah. Enjoy that.
This is like seeing George Washington.
Cause he should be gone.
That's one thing I like to say about all of us, guys. Enjoy us while we're here.
Enjoy our remaining years.
Yeah.
Cause you know, in like,
yeah, there we go.
Cause in like, 50, in like 50 years, I hope 50.
Yeah.
We're all gone.
Yeah. These four ain't.
Yeah.
They ain't here. At least three of us.
There you have it.
He looks good. He's a healthy.
He looks good. He's doing well. Yeah.
He's young. Has a clean
lifestyle.
Dude, my grandma's 96, and she was like telling me like the stuff I need to do, and I was like, Grandma, I don't know, babe.
You're about to check out, babe. Yeah.
How much does she drink a day?
Well, a little chatty ain't different.
Oh, baby,
living a different life, Graham.
I would love to ask you guys this though in closing. Obviously, again, I wish that Jeff were here because the Hardy Boys just—I mean—they are iconic. They are rock stars.
They love Jeff Hardy.
Like
he's beyond a brother to us, by the way. Just get that out there.
I would like to ask you guys, as you guys are considered to be in that handful of great tag teams of your generation, where do the Hardy Boys rank in your minds in
number
terms
one.
Of all-time greats?
So yes, number one's a great answer. But I'll say this. I got a 15-year-old son at home. He fell out of love with wrestling. I never did because I kind of feel like you and I probably grew up very similar. We were obsessed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I never fell out of it. A lot of kids did. They got to teenage years. They found girls. They didn't like wrestling. So Cade did that. And he came back to me and he goes, I told Poppy, my dad, his grandfather, that I want to do what you do. I want to be a pro wrestler. I was like, well, that's really cool. You need to get a college degree, asshole, whatever. But he goes, can we watch TLC 1 and 2 together, Dad? And I was like, you're not going to see any shit your dad ever did, but yes, we can. And we watched TLC 2 three times in a row. And
oh my!
You got to think about how iconic that is and what rock stars these guys are. And like, this, he's 15.
Right.
He wasn't alive when it happened.
Right.
I was a freshman in college when TLC 2 happened, and I'd done like 3 indie shows. But like, that's what he remembers, and that's what he didn't ask to watch Hogan and The Rock. He asked to watch the TLC matches because
that's
there's
so
nothing
cool.
else
awesome.
Like it. It's iconic.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
You know, so I grew up watching the, you know, NWA in North Carolina. That's where I grew up, right? So it was always the Rock and Roll Express, the Midnight Express. Then I, you know, as I got into the business and became a superstar.
Of course. Rich and famous. And just,
I don't even deserve to be next to you, right?
I think there's no way you can't say that the Hardy Boys aren't the absolute number one team of all time. And then, you know, and becoming, you know, friends with Matt and able to, and Jeff as well, and understanding what great humans they are and their families and, loving them. I'm getting teary eyed. Jesus. but honestly, Hardy Boys, number one, let's go.
Let's go.
And what I always say all the time is that.
You're the man. Thank you.
People don't understand, this right here, this is one of the true good guys in pro wrestling. He's one of the
legend.
He's not going to lie to you.
It's Matt Fact.
There was a time he didn't lie to me. I didn't love it.
right.
It's a Matt Fact for real.
But you guys, it's a Matt Fact.
but there's so much dishonesty in pro wrestling. People lie. The industry is built on a lie. And I think Matt is one of the true good guys. I call him all the time the secret sauce of the Hardy Boys.
But Matt also has a genuine love for professional wrestling, what we do, and
dude, I can see.
I don't know
Gallows
that we're very similar men in any way at all,
there.
But I
this
feel like
incredible.
We both have this that our hobby is our job, and if
for
you
sure.
love something so much, it blurs the lines. But like, you're the most passionate man I've ever seen do pro wrestling, and that's why everybody loves you. It's cool.
Well. Thank Are we you, trying man. To get teary-eyed up here?
Yeah,
what the
yeah you want to cry a little bit, goodness. Machine Gun? Huh? With your little short shorts on?
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry for my language for the kids.
I feel like all the passion that we had for wrestling and life together and just having fun together, it's like why we all bonded so close, especially during that run. Such a great time. There was nothing better than the Matt Hardy Good Brothers meeting.
No, yeah, we loved being in Europe 14 nights in a row, doing the match, getting on the bus, talking shit, and just hanging out. It's fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Matt, we got about 2 minutes here. Is there anything else you'd like to add about the Good Brothers here?
The first thing I'd like to say about these guys, you hear it a lot of times. They'll say, oh, there's guys in the business, but they don't get it. They don't get it. They don't get it. Let me say, more than anybody else in this industry, these two guys, the Good Brothers, they get it. They understand what wrestling is. They're smart. They're great. And they're good human beings on top of that as well. And I love the fact that I got to know them so well whenever we came back for that run in the WWE. And it's so interesting to watch your career trajectory as well. And I'm so excited for what you guys are going to do next because I would imagine some pretty big things are going to be happening in your future.
Yep.
Well, just I promise wait, him if he keeps having babies, we're never going to retire because I want to keep wrestling either way. So,
hey, we asked for 1.2 million and we weren't there tonight or last night.
Yeah, we've been exposing this all day, which you'll pop for as a loss. They said, anyways, well, what would it take to get you guys back? And I go, tell them a million. He goes, I told them 1.2. I go, did they call back? He goes, no.
Well, that's it. Wrap it up.
Yeah, all right, nice to see you guys. Thanks for having us.
Hey, listen, we appreciate
anyways,
you
didn't
guys.
Bring us back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been really great. Thank you. Mike Weber at Fight TV, we love you.
Hey, I'll take 800, I mean.
Yeah. Talk Shop Mania 3 is coming. We need it. Anyway.
We appreciate you
that's
guys
That's a real Matt Hardy
us.
Laugh, too, by the way.
That was shoot pop.
The Matt Hardy cackle is
Box 750.
All right.
Listen, guys, we really appreciate having you here with us.
225?
Okay. Relax, cowboy.
On this live edition.
Relax, Storm. Can you even live off that with all these children?
35?
Yeah, the gaggle of children.
I mean, listen,
here.
This guy has the most procreating penis in professional wrestling. We got to make more money.
And with that.
Well, maybe other man. Than you, but you're already rich. Yeah, so, you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Matt walks into his house and says things are about to be broken, and all of a sudden you got to.
Listen, I know two men who run their houses, the machine gun and the broken one.
Yes. Listen, guys, we are so appreciative of your time. Thank you
Thank
so much
you.
For joining us here
Thanks,
on this
guys.
Live edition of The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. Matt, I'm so happy for you, man. I know it's been a time where you're reinventing once again, but I know great things are ahead for you in AEW, and it's a true, I'm a lifelong Hardy Boy fan, and getting to work with you every week is a true honor, and you guys can check it out every single Friday, The Extreme Life of Matt Hardy drops. Anything else you'd like to say, Matt?
Thank you guys for being here. I know we're at the very tail end of the night, but thank you guys for hanging around. We greatly appreciate it. To everyone out there on Fight that is tuned in, thank you so much. Thank you to Carl. Thank you to Mr. Gallows for coming and hanging out and doing this.
Love you,
thank
babe.
Thank you, John, for hosting it. No, I love you guys as well, man.
It's
so great. So great to be with you. This is the definition of brotherhood.
100%.
Good brotherhood, my friend. Yeah. And we appreciate everyone tuning in to StarCast 5 right here on Fight TV. It's time, guys. You ready? The main event, Ric Flair's last match.
Is that now?
That's now, brother. You guys were the main leading up to it.
Fuck.
So thank you, everyone, for tuning in to StarCast 5 here and all of our great panels. A special thanks to our production crew who absolutely crushed it this weekend here. And this is going to be a very, very special night right here on Fight TV. The words have been spoken. This has been the Extreme Life of Matt Hardy. It's time now for Ric Flair's last match.
Enjoy. Thank you, everyone.